Welcome back. You're listening to This Week on RTE Radio 1 with Justin McCarthy. Well, we've already heard about Fianna Fáil's plans to contest the presidential election. On Tuesday, Fine Gael is expected to select Heather Humphreys as its candidate for the contest. Sinn Féin has yet to announce its intentions. A number of independents have expressed an interest in entering the field, but right now, the only candidate with the required support is Catherine Connolly, who has the backing of the Social Democrats, People Before Profit and the Labour Party, although not everybody in the Labour Party is behind her. This week, the former Labour leader Alan Kelly told Fran Curry on Tip FM that he will not be nominating or supporting her and accused Catherine Connolly of showing disdain for the Labour Party. He went on to criticise her views on international relations, on Syria, Russia and on the EU, and on her association with Mick Wallace and her decision to support the vaccine sceptic Gemma O'Doherty instead of Michael D. Higgins during the last presidential election 7 years ago. Catherine Connolly is with us now in our Galway studio. Catherine Connolly, good afternoon and you're very welcome to the programme.
Justin.
Are you concerned that the Labour Party support is ebbing away from you now in the wake of Alan Kelly's intervention on Tip FM during the week?
Perhaps I might start by telling listeners that I'm incredibly proud to be the only candidate standing so far. I showed courage in declaring my candidacy very early for the very purpose of allowing people to scrutinise me. I sit on a public accounts committee and I absolutely value scrutiny, albeit in a respectful, dignified way. And I have been canvassing now for over 5 weeks all over the country. I'm just back from Electric Picnic. And indeed, I still have the wristband on my wrist. And that was an incredible experience. 80,000 people. Let me say, I was going to say overwhelmed, but it's not the appropriate word. I was absolutely inspired by the engagement from people who came up to me to talk about the presidency, the election and the role of it.
Okay.
Young people are very much engaged and wish to talk about the events. So it would seem to me, Justin, on that basis alone and my experience of going around the country, that there's actually a disconnect between the official conversations and commentary and what people are feeling on the ground of all ages in all parts of Ireland.
Are you concerned that Labour Party support is ebbing away from you in the wake of Alan Kelly's comments?
I am particularly delighted that the Labour Party came to a decision to support me, and they're behind me, as are the Social Democrats, People Before Profit, a number of independents, and other parties are still considering, as for example the Green Party and Sinn Féin. From day one, I made it clear that I absolutely respected their processes. And I made my decision to stand, indeed, after a tortuous personal journey for myself. But once I made that decision, I made it proudly. I didn't make it because I had the money to stand. I didn't make it because I would have the backing of parties. I made it, just to go back to something Minister Foley said, that we need a president for now, the situation that we find ourselves nationally and internationally. And I made my decision based on that, to use my voice for peace and to represent the values of our people on the ground.
Can I ask you about some of the comments that Alan Kelly did make about you? Because you said that you do value scrutiny. One of the concerns he raised about you was your decision 7 years ago to give a presidential nomination to Gemma O'Doherty, who a month earlier had said that the HPV vaccine did not stand up to scrutiny. And now you told the Sunday Independent that you have no regrets about that decision. Why did you think it was a good judgment to nominate Gemma O'Doherty to run in the presidential race?
Well, first of all, that question has been framed in a way that, from Alan Kelly, in the way that I didn't support President Higgins. That's not accurate. I have the greatest of respect for Michael D. Higgins. Indeed, I think he's been extremely courageous. And I've said that publicly and privately on my interactions with him. That's number one. In relation to nominating someone, when the presidential election comes up, all TDs and senators are faced with the dilemma who to nominate. It's not the same as supporting someone. I did not and do not support Gemma O'Doherty. But I made a decision to be one of many nominees to give her a chance to stand. And it's something indeed that's come up again in this election. And so it's it, it, it deserves better, more general discussion.
Did you know, though, when you gave her the nomination, that she had given an interview to the Business Post a month earlier in which she said that there was something seriously wrong with the HPV vaccine and that it did not stand up to scrutiny in her view?
To be honest, and I always strive to be as honest as I can, I can't remember at that. What I do remember, and what led me eventually, after thinking about it, was that this woman had done some good work in relation to, as a journalist, in relation to investigations. That's what stood out for me at that time. And so I made that decision at that time. It's really important to say that's not the same as endorsing somebody. And even now, and other elections, we're faced with that choice. And how do we do it? And actually, Justin, I'm going to repeat, I think it deserves further discussion. How do we broaden out who should have access to standing for the President of Ireland?
You say you're not sure whether you knew about that interview at the time. I mean, look, you are somebody who has a reputation for doggedly pursuing people in public life if they have failed to do their due diligence before they carry out an important task. Doesn't it cast then serious doubt about your judgment that you would nominate somebody to enter the presidential race, a race for the highest office in the land, without making sure that you were certain that that person had the character to hold that office?
I don't make those decisions. You see, that's the good thing about this. The important thing and the significant thing about this election, the people of Ireland decide. It is the only time that they decide. They can't decide for the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach.
But you had the role of putting her in the race.
If I just could. It's really important. There's a nomination process and she didn't actually succeed in getting the nominations, as many candidates today are struggling to get nominations. And so there's a big difference between choosing to make a decision to give somebody a nomination with a lot of other TDs, I might add, and senators, and support. They don't go together. And it merits a bigger discussion because the election is determined, who gets into the office is determined by the people. And I have the greatest respect for the people of Ireland who will make their judgment. They did it in two referendums not too long ago against all of the government parties saying vote one way. Over 70-something percent of the electorate said, no, we won't do that. So I have... Democracy is all we have, and the voice of the person in that democracy is vital to me.
Do you think you could have shown better judgment at that time?
On everything I've done all over my life, when I reflect, I could have always done better. And I will just really try to do better in the future. Okay. That's been my motto on everything I've ever done and every role. And there hasn't been a time when I've come off an interview or had a client as a clinical psychologist or a client as a barrister where I didn't go home in the evening and say, my God, I could have done better. I could have done it differently. That's part of my nature, part of my training and part of my background from my own family.
Can I ask you about a trip you went on to Syria with the TDs Mick Wallace, Claire Daly and Maureen O'Sullivan? It was in 2018 when Bashar al-Assad was in power in Syria, and you went to parts of the country which were controlled by the Assad regime. Your presence in Syria at that time would have had to have been approved by the Assad regime, wouldn't it?
What we got to get into Syria was a visa. Clearly, that had to be approved by the Assad government. I have never, ever hesitated in my utter condemnation of Assad, publicly and privately. Back in 2018, I got a wonderful opportunity. And I might come back to my failure to take other opportunities after that, given my work commitment. But I got an opportunity to join a group of activists who had been active in the Palestinian cause. In fact, they had gone ahead of us. And they had gone to Beirut and a Palestinian camp in Beirut. We joined them after that, myself, Deputy Maureen O'Sullivan, Claire Daly and Mick Wallace. The first place we went to after we left Beirut, we flew into Beirut and then to Damascus, was to go to the Yarmouk Palestinian camp. I went there foolishly thinking it was going to be a tented community. And what I saw was a city more than three times the size of Galway, utterly destroyed by the Assad regime. We were shown around by Palestinians. We had conversations with them. We exchanged the little gifts we had. And I came back with an absolute horror of war of the Assad regime, which I had before I went there. And generally speaking, that we need to use our voice for peace.
But it wasn't just Palestinians that you met there. You met also with supporters of Bashar al-Assad, at least one supporter. He was the head of the city's Chamber of Commerce. He ran a school in Aleppo and was a member of the Syrian Parliament, a man named Faraz al-Shahabi. He was also under sanction by the EU for providing financial support to the Assad regime. Was it a mistake to meet somebody who was financially backing a dictator and to have your photograph taken with him?
We went there on a fact-finding mission. I'd absolutely no respect for that man after listening to him for the duration that I listened to him. He was the head of the Chamber of Commerce. There was community activists with us, and that man was put under serious pressure in relation to questions. Were we happy with the answers? Absolutely not. That was just he took us on a tour of an area where 40,000, and this is a huge figure, 40,000 factories had been knocked to the ground. We saw utter destruction. That was down in a part of Aleppo. In between, we went to the Salesian nuns, where we met with his sister Bridget Doody, unfortunately has since died, a beautiful woman. We visited a hospital. We had a meeting with UNRWA organised by Deputy Maureen. Because it's important to get the facts out. With Maureen O'Sullivan arranged the meeting. That was the nature of the trip. And indeed, I left a day early because I had a commitment to chair a meeting on Inishman. So I went from Aleppo to Arden in about 25 hours. And I have to say, it was actually hotter in Arden than it was in Aleppo. In 25 hours, such was my commitment to my job that I was back in Arden chairing a meeting for Inchinol at Inishman.
Did you raise any questions before you left for Syria about who you would be meeting and whether or not you would be meeting supporters of Bashar al-Assad, like Mr. al-Shahabi? Did you ask about that possibility at all before you left?
We certainly knew who we were meeting, in the sense of we were going to the hospital, the nuns, we were meeting the Chamber of Commerce, and we were going to as many refugee camps as we possibly could.
And Mr. al-Shahabi is somebody who had publicly called for the death of a child who had criticised the Assad regime a year earlier. Did you know about his background? Did you know about his views and his remarks?
Again, at this point, and looking back, I was certainly aware of certain matters. We were meeting him in the context of the Chamber of Commerce. Did I like this man? Was I impressed with this? Absolutely not.
I do want clarity because you said you were aware of certain matters before you had that meeting. Yeah. What were you aware of? Did you know about his remarks calling for the death of a child?
I'm sure to be honest, at this point, I couldn't. It's 6 years. All I can tell you is we went with a specific purpose of fact-finding on the ground. If I just could, please, because it's important. Because actually, significantly, Deputy Maureen O'Sullivan's name is only being mentioned lately. And that's significant. She's always been left out of the narrative. We went on a fact-finding mission in relation to the Palestinian refugees over and over. And that's what we did.
But what did you know about Mr. al-Shahabi before you met him?
I know that it was an absolute brutal dictatorship in Syria, which I abhor and abhorred. Now, we have to remember that various members of Irish government, and particularly Micheál Martin, actually met with Assad. I've never done anything like that. I went for a specific purpose. I came back a different person in relation to destruction, in relation to dictatorships, in relation to how possibly can we use our voice. And you must remember, this was 2018. We were very concerned. And now we're in 25 and there's been an ongoing genocide that we're not even talking about. And back in 18, we could see what was happening. More significantly, the activists on the ground who had dedicated their lives to the Palestinian refugees were so concerned. And here we are in 25, and there's a genocide unfolding for over a year now, and we're not talking about it.
In hindsight, do you think it was a mistake to meet with Mr. Al-Shahabi during that meeting, during that trip to Syria?
Certainly, in retrospect, when one looks back and sees the comments that he made, and you see them, absolutely, this man is utterly unacceptable to me. However, what I got out of the whole meeting, all of the meetings I had, empowered me, enabled me, and made me stronger as a voice for peace, and to use our voice at every level, in every situation, to abhor what's going on. And remember, Assad was championed by the Western powers. I've always had a horror of the dictatorship and that government. He was championed by the Western powers and wined and dined by them.
Mick Wallace and Claire Daly were on that visit to Syria with you too, and Maureen O'Sullivan, as you mentioned. But in relation to Mick Wallace and Claire Daly, you describe them in your interview with Mary Regan in the Sunday Independent as like-minded politicians. And you said that they may be involved in your campaign. And I just wondered, are you supportive of their recent actions, their decision to vote against the designation of Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism in the European Parliament, their decision to meet members of Iran's Revolutionary Guard in Tehran, and to meet members of an Iranian-backed paramilitary group, Hashid al-Shaabi, in Iraq in 2021? Is that the type of political activity that you, as a president, would also endorse?
You know, I would love to be here on your programme describing where I come from, what I stand for, and what's my vision for Ireland. I have no problem answering your questions, but it would be lovely if the interview was framed to allow me to tell listeners why I'm standing in relation to the two ex-MEPs and ex-TDs that you mentioned. I first got to know these two TDs in 2016. And indeed, it was Claire Daly's negotiation skills that allowed a technical group of us to come together. A technical group. That doesn't mean we agreed with everything, to allow us to have speaking time.
But you said you were like-minded politicians.
If I could, honestly, I will answer your questions. I have no difficulty. Claire Daly, I became a member of the Public Accounts Committee, agus Cahirlach than Cush the Gwelga, as a result of Claire Daly's negotiation skills. She was deeply admired by all TDs across the floor of the House. She was single-handedly responsible for bringing in legislation, which is most unusual from a member of an opposition, on maternal deaths. There are many, many other things I could. For example, they received the highest score of all MEPs from a coalition of leading environmental NGOs. I could go on to mention all the good things. Quite clearly, I wouldn't agree on everything. However, I have a group now, a technical group that I'm part of, 8 members. I wouldn't agree with them on everything. On some things we agree on. Indeed, I agree with the Labour Party on occasions and with the government on issues. And I would like to confirm that I'm very much an issues person, regardless of who's speaking, if the issue is something I agree with. And there were many issues in the Dáil where I agreed with them, certainly under scrutiny of the guards at the time, and many other matters.
Do you support sanctions on Russia?
I'm on the record for sanctions on Russia. And just let me just generally speak about sanctions for a moment. I'm on the record for condemning Russia. Unreservedly, I'm on the record for supporting sanctions. But let me just clarify something on sanctions. We have lots and lots of different reports coming out. I remember Dennis Halliday resigning because of the sanctions and the consequences of that on innocent children in Iraq. So I would love a discussion on sanctions generally and whether they're effective or not effective. It really needs to be discussed, because I, as a politician, along with other politicians, quickly go in and said, yes, we must actually sanction Russia. And I did. However, we're not sanctioning Israel. And it goes to the credibility of our government. It goes to the credibility of our role as a neutral country. whether we apply sanctions fairly, whether they're targeted, whether they're effective. All of that, Justin, needs to be discussed.
In the Irish Times on Friday, the journalist Justine McCarthy wrote a piece about you. I'm sure you've seen it. And she put forward the suggestion that Claire Daly or Mick Wallace could be appointed by you to the Council of State advising the President if you were elected. Is that something that you would consider?
Certainly not. Certainly not. It doesn't even come. You know, the questions I'm being asked are really interesting for your listeners, because when I declared my candidacy outside the Dáil, one respected journalist from a certain paper asked me, were my friends going to come out of Buswells to support me? The friends being Claire Wallace and Claire Daly and Mick Wallace, in case I didn't understand. I was repeatedly asked that question. One wasn't in the country and one wasn't near the Dáil. I've no idea. And I'm simply saying that as an example of the type of questions I'm getting and the type of framing. I'm well able to answer them. But the point being, it's a framing of a dialogue, and there are much more important issues to be spoken about in a presidential campaign.
OK, can I ask you then about some of your own comments? I mean, you have said in the past that we cannot trust the United States, England or France. And those are three of the five members of the UN Security Council. Do you accept that as president of head of state, that it's unwise to criticise countries which are friendly to Ireland, like the UK, like France and like the United States?
The comments I made in relation to France and America, in relation to not trusting them, was very much in the context of the genocide in Gaza. Very much in context. Have I a trust problem with America? I think every person in the country has a trust problem with America. We have a President Trump who's volatile, unpredictable, acting like a bully, bringing in tariffs when it suits them. And interestingly, Justin, we keep talking about the consequences of tariffs, but we don't talk about the consequences of genocide. The consequences of genocide for the people of Palestine. I heard an ad just before your programme started. We have famine in Gaza. Famine has been created in Gaza. Created once again, like it was in Ireland in 1845, a man-made famine. And I would love to be talking about my policy in relation to that. What role, if any, as a president? I am very conscious, having worked as 20-something years as a barrister, of the role of the presidency as set out under the Constitution. I am more than familiar with the articles there. And one in particular I keep mentioning, and it's Article 12, subsection 8, which says the president will take a solemn vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. Now, that's an extremely serious vow that I would take very seriously, okay, to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland.
In that context, one of the things you've spoken out about is neutrality, and you believe neutrality, I think, should be protected. And you've opposed changes to the triple lock. Those changes may come into force, may be voted through the Oireachtas, and if you were president, you may have to sign them into law. Would you do that? If you were president, would you sign changes into law which you believe could damage Ireland's neutrality?
The role of the president is to look at the legislation and to see if it's in compliance with the Constitution. And obviously no president does that on his or her own. They take advice from the Council of State. And you look at the legislation in a very specific manner. And on occasions in the past, people on the ground might have had a misunderstanding in relation to that role, going back to serving President Michael D. Higgins and what he could or could not do with legislation. So you scrutinise that legislation with expert advice, you listen, and then you make a decision whether to send it off to the Supreme Court or not, with the differing consequences arising from that. So I've been asked, would I be able to carry out that role? I'd have no problem carrying out that role. I've carried out so many roles in my life, the last one being Laskean Comhairle, okay, where I showed absolute impartiality, fairness, the ability to listen and the ability to realise the importance of the office of Laskean Comhairle. And just on your question of legislation, I got actually a chance to see what was involved there, because I had spoken very strongly on third level legislation that was going through the Dáil, and I was concerned about the corporatisation of our third level education. And just as it turned out, it was ironic. But when that legislation went to the President to be signed, I can't remember it was the President or the Cian Chomhairle out of the country. So I had to look at all of that. And so the very question you're putting to me, I had to look at, read all the documents.
Is one you've addressed, yes, okay, in terms of your actions.
As it turned out, yes. I didn't have to do it because the President or the Cian Chomhairle came back.
All right, you've had the advantage of being the first candidate in the field. When people come up to you at Electric Picnic or wherever else it may be and say, what is your vision? What are you going to bring to the presidency if you're elected? What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, I listen to them. And if you listen to people, they'll tell you what they want from a presidency and from the candidate. An Electric Picnic was absolutely energising. 80,000 people. Let me come and I'll answer your question very specifically. But it's coming from the people. My whole campaign has been a movement from the ground up. It came from people appealing to me, setting out the characteristics that they thought I had. And those characteristics, which come from my own background with a large family, from circumstances in my family, followed by the different roles I had as a clinical psychologist, barrister, city councillor, teacher and so on, all have given me the confidence to say, I have learned how to listen.
Okay.
I have learned to show compassion, care, and a voice for peace, a voice to reflect the values of people on the ground, which are much more than what the government realises in terms of solidarity with the underdog, with the people of Palestine, with the people of the Ukraine, in a fair manner, absolutely standing up against war.
Catherine Connolly, thank you very much for coming in to our Galway studio today to speak with us. We do appreciate your time. That's Catherine Connolly, independent TD and presidential candidate. We're back with more after this break.